If you're in the building materials, construction, or AEC space, you need good strategies on how to grow your business, increase your sales, and improve your marketing. I'm joined today by Mark Mitchell from Wizard Strategy. He and I met in a mastermind group out of Vancouver, Canada, and we're going to talk about how to market your building materials company. Mark, welcome to the show.
Oh, Sam, it's so great to catch up with you again. I'm looking forward to this.
Yeah, absolutely. So just to start off, Mark, how do you define innovation and where are you innovative?
Well, the building materials industry is an industry that to me is stuck in the past. It's very resistant to change. When I look at sales and marketing approaches, they're 10 years behind, we'll say, you know, the Apples, the Nikes, whoever you want to hold up there as somebody that is very good at contemporary marketing. The building materials industry is 10 years behind. And so we start there. And so innovation in building materials to me is really quite easy because there isn't, you're not competing like in high tech or something, right? And the bar is pretty low, right? So I define my definition of innovation is constantly challenging the status quo. What you did yesterday that worked well, it's easy to settle in to go, oh, I've figured out the secret sauce. We just do this and I can make money and chill, right? And you can, right? But it's at some point you're going to get caught with your pants down where somebody's has a better idea. And then you're behind the eight ball and you're forced to try to either quell them, dismiss them or get rid of them, or you're behind the eight ball now trying to madly catch up, right? And so that's the way that I look at innovation. The way that I try to practice innovation is to constantly be challenging the status quo, you know, to the point that sometimes it has cost me business because I'm not going to deliver you if you want to grow your sales, I'm going to deliver you solutions. If you are sure exactly how to do it, then you don't need me. Okay. I'm always going to challenge the status quo, even if I'm wrong, to just make sure that we went down that road, that we looked at that. Okay. And that's how I look at innovation.
Gotcha. Tell us about your company, Wizard Strategy, and what you do for your clients.
Well, I have spent my whole career either working for advertising agencies or owning my own agency that was totally focused on building materials. So early on, my father was kind of like the Don Draper of the world, where, you know, he was always the ad man when I grew up working for agencies or the advertising manager. I remember the French cuffs and cufflinks and the martinis and the cigarettes and hopefully not the secretaries, but I grew up around that. And so I quickly started to, then he started his own small agency in Findlay, Ohio. And so I further grew up around it. And then in college, he offered me like, come work for me for a summer. And I fell in love with it so much. I never went back to college. I loved it. And I discovered there that I loved working with B2B clients more than B2C clients. That you could solve a client's problem with things other than just paid media advertising by thinking. And you were dependent upon, you could motivate the channel to sell for you if you did it correctly. I just liked the challenge more than the idea of running a consumer, developing a consumer ad that would have great appeal. That didn't appeal to me as much as solving what I thought was a more challenging problem of who are all the decision makers and influencers and where are they today and how do I line them up in support of my clients? And so I started there. Then after 3 years working for my father, I left and went to the big city of Toledo, Ohio, and I went to work for a firm that somehow wasn't planned, but they specialized in building materials. They just happened to be the largest agency in town. I went and met with the CEO, and he hired me as his assistant. And I didn't really care. I just went and said, look, this is how much money my father pays me. I don't care what you pay me. I just want to work here. And after 6 months, it will, you know, we'll see if it, you know, I was a good choice or not. Right. And so I went to work there, and their biggest client was Owens Corning Fiberglass, which was a phenomenal learning experience because it was commercial, residential, new construction, remodel, furnace filters, insulation, pipe wrap, roofing, commercial, you know, just every kind of product you could imagine. And they still are very aggressive marketers. Many companies, you know, will look and say, well, we're going to do a new ad or a brochure for this year, and that's our marketing program, right? And Owens Corning was constantly just never-ending challenge. Like, we've got to grow. Okay, come on. What's, you know, and they were always challenging you to come up with better things. They didn't tell you what to do based on what's worked in the past. They always challenged you and were open to very innovative ideas that, to me, always involved making their customer more successful. And that has always stuck with me. About when I look and say, if I'm trying to sell an insulation contractor, how is dealing with my client's company going to make that insulation contractor more successful in their business? I start there. I don't go like, we got a cheaper product, we got a better product, buy me instead of the other guy. It's like, no, this is a business proposition. And so that's where I kind of started out. And then in 2011, I realized, well, I was tired of running a 30-person ad agency that specialized in building materials, and just tired of dealing with the people and ego, all the stuff that you had to. And I also found that 50% of the time when I would start working with a client, I never do what the client tells me. Like, the client says, I need a new website. I go, maybe you do, and maybe you don't. Okay, let's find out what you're trying to grow your sales, or we agree upon what your challenge is. Then I'm going to go do some research, and I may come back and say, yep, you need a new website, right? But I might come back and say, a website wouldn't be bad, but that's not your real problem. Okay, this is your real problem. Okay, and it could be shipping, it could be lead times, it could be communications. I found 50% of the time, the problem my client faced was not going to be solved by an ad agency. But if you're an ad agency, you're going, okay, well, I got to sell creative services and websites and all those things. Okay, that's what I got to stay focused on. It doesn't really matter that that's not going to solve the client's problem, right? He either wants a website, or I can sell him one, and that'll be a nice, you know, piece of income, right? And so I wanted to be free of that need or limiting thinking. I wanted to be open to be, let's really get to the heart of your issue. Not that a new website isn't a great idea for anybody, okay? But, you know, but there may be other core issues that literally it's kind of like you've tied your hand behind your back. You have this new website, but you got your hand tied behind your back because you have this other limiting thing you're not dealing with, or you aren't even recognizing.
I see. I guess I'm curious because, you know, there's a lot of, like you said, a lot of marketing and advertising agencies out there who do anything and everything. And you've really niched down into that building material space with everything that you do. What effect has that had on your ability to grow your business?
I think that I learned early on. I don't know where this lesson came from. I wish, you know, things in your past, you kind of go, wow, this was so important. Where did I get this? Okay. But I realized that when I dealt in the agency business, you're dealing with creative people, right? And I think my skill set is being able to communicate with the client and his customers, and then giving creative people the right input to they do their magic. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I saw the creative people all wanting to be the agency for McDonald's. You know, like, mm-hmm. I want to win this award for doing the greatest commercial, you know? And I thought, okay, you guys go there. Okay, everybody's trying to go there, and I'm going to go over here where nobody has any real interest. It's kind of boring to them, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the idea about, if I stay focused there, and it's maybe back to, what is it, Malcolm Gladwell's thing about, like, if you spend 10,000 hours doing something, you know, you get really good at it. Well, yeah. You know, I've spent way over 10,000 hours in building materials, and so I can look at an architectural product or a home improvement product and right away start to go boom, 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 you know, see things. And I just said, you know, the more I focus, we'll say in the advertising agency world, many agencies, they of course think they can, they're magic because they're so creatively talented. They can work for anybody. They can help. Doesn't matter what business you got, a bank, you got a hotel, you got a building material company, doesn't matter. Right. And I found that, so that limits their ability. And one of my thoughts was, okay, I want to be able to meet with any building material company anywhere in the world and have them go, we should talk to this guy. They may not hire me, but they're at least go, this guy knows what he's talking about, right? So early on in my career, I devoted myself to being staying focused in building materials. And I that has now somebody, a brilliant guy named David Baker, convinced me to write a book, even though I didn't think that I was capable. Like if you talk to my high school English teacher, she would go, him, write a book. Are you kidding me? Right. But I started out and I wrote, another really good guy, Michael Gass, who has a company called Fuel Lines. He convinced me to start a blog and to write 30 blog posts in 30 days. And after 6 months of working on that, I realized I'd written half a book. I surprised myself. And I said, what are the missing chapters? And I gave myself a goal of the next 6 months, because I write a weekly blog post or article that I'm going to fill in. That's going to be my next 6 months. And now, boom, all of a sudden I have a book written, you know, and so that really, let's say, put me on the map of writing a book. You know, it gave me credibility, respect, I guess, you know, and because the, you know, and the point of view, the other thing I learned was to not be afraid to have a point of view. I was probably initially afraid to write because people would disagree with me. And I learned from David and Michael that if people aren't disagreeing with you, you're not really writing.
Yeah.
You know, you're not really helping people if you're telling people what everybody already knows. So I work hard to, you know, get under people's skin, challenge their assumptions about the right way to do something, and call things out and so forth. And so I, you know, I've managed to upset a number of people, and that's okay. And, you know, they don't want to work with me because I don't bow down to them and think they're geniuses, you know, or whatever. You know, I point out that the emperor has no clothes here and they don't like that. Right. And so I think that credibility with people read my stuff, they go, Mark isn't trying to kiss anybody's butt. You know, Mark is telling me, I may not agree with Mark, but Mark made me stop and think, you know, when am I doing the right thing? If I'm a salesman, you know, is my approach to my customers right? If I'm the president of the company, is my approach correct? If VP of marketing, VP of sales, customer service, whoever, you know, I make them think. And so from that, I think it's like the more I give away, the more business I get. Is that the more content, the more advice that I share for free, the more inquiries that I get about, hey, we'd like to have you speak at our sales meeting. We'd like to have you, we've got a problem. And people don't come to me when business is good and they want it to be better. They come to me when they have a problem. Like, we're stuck. Why are our sales not hitting their goals? Why are they declining? How do we deal with this new competitor? We're afraid we're going to lose our biggest customer. Whatever it is, there's a problem, and they realize that they're too close to the situation to be able to see what the issue is. And I always approach things not from, I really don't want to be a product expert. I know a lot about building materials and how things are built and so forth. You'd never want me to design or build something for you, trust me. But what I really focus on is understanding the customer, understanding a day in the life of an architect, a roofing contractor, a distributor, one step or two step, a dealer, a big box buyer, all of those, you know, facilities manager, owner developer, general contractor. That's really where my focus is. Like, what are their challenges and how can my clients, dealing with my client, make them more successful?
So I guess I'm curious with that specialization you have. And first off, I think it's very powerful and very valuable to have that customer understanding. I mean, that's what every B2B customer wants or needs more than anything nowadays, is that sort of like really strong, sticky message, right? That appeals to those customers' ears. You know, is there something when you look at those customers, let's say somebody like big box retailers, you know, what kind of, because you're focused on that niche, right? So their marketing is not going to be the same as McDonald's. So what's different about it? What about the type of marketing you would do to a big box retailer is specialized as opposed to some mass B2C thing in terms of like the message or what you might focus on?
Well, the first thing is that a big box customer is so big that they're intimidating to most people that sell to them. Hmm. It's literally like you just decided to become addicted to volume. Okay. So if you weren't selling, like Steel Chainsaws does a great job of not selling to Home Depot or Lowe's. Okay. Hmm. They run ads. You cannot buy our product at Lowe's or Home Depot. I'm like, wow. Hmm. Yeah. But we have 8,000 dealers who understand chainsaws. Okay. So you're going to go in there and experts going to help you find the right chainsaw for you. Okay. Hmm. Now it could be a typical building material company would go, oh, wow, Home Depot and Lowe's could sell a lot of our chainsaws, right? And all of a sudden, they go there where they're going to face a lower profit margin. They're going to face pressure to lower the quality of their product. And all of a sudden, the customer is going to be dictating to them what they're going to do. Well, right now, you know, they're in charge of their own destiny, and their customers are extremely loyal to them. They make higher margins and their customer makes higher margins because their customer doesn't have to compete with the big box. Okay. But let's say that it's not that big boxes are a bad thing. It's just you need to appreciate what you're dealing with. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like the first time somebody sold to Walmart. Okay. If you were selling t-shirts or something, your world just changed. Okay. And so the same thing happens with big boxes, whether it's Lowe's, Depot, or Menards are the three big ones. And so most people are afraid of them, and they're waiting to be told what to do. And they cross their fingers that they will stay on the shelf, okay? Stay in store, be part of the product line, okay? They know more about their product than the Home Depot buyer. But they're afraid to stand up and say, hey, let me show you how to grow this category. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so the first mistake they make is they try to focus on themselves. Right. So if I sell doors, let's say Home Depot carries 5 brands of doors. Okay. The first mistake companies make is they try to go in and say, you should buy more of our doors and less of the other guy's doors. And what the Home Depot buyer really wants you to do is to say, it doesn't really, the Home Depot buyer goes, it doesn't help me at the end of the year if all you did was cannibalize some sales and move them from your brand to another brand. I don't get a bonus for that. I don't get promoted for that. I get promoted because I grew my category.
Yeah.
Now, I don't care if you're the biggest guy or the smallest guy. If you have an attitude about, I'm going to help that Home Depot buyer, category manager, whatever their title is, I'm going to help them be more successful. I'm going to help them sell more doors. All right. Even if I only have 10% share of their door sales, if I help them grow, one, you know, I'm going to also grow, right? And the other thing that's going to happen is that guy's going to start to go, wait a minute, you do more to help me than anybody else. I'm going to give you another SKU. I'm going to give you, you know, a better display. I have an opportunity at an end cap to do a door promotion, and I'm going to feature your doors, right? Mm-hmm. And most companies, they're just so focused on seeing the competition and the sales they're losing as opposed to helping the customer once again be more successful. And the other challenge, particularly with building big boxes today, is to me, they are really afraid of Amazon and other online sellers, right? They're really behind. And so it's literally when you talk to them today, the store is now secondary. The most important thing is, what can you do for me online? Okay. Mm. And now it's much easier to get them to sell your product online because they don't have to inventory it, ship it in and all that. It's real easy to get. It's much easier today. And it's harder to get in the store. Right. And so there's this almost like when I work on line reviews for clients, it's literally like the stores don't exist. and I have to find ways to creatively force the store story into the presentation, because what they really care about is how you're going to help me grow online, because that's what their management is measuring them on. The other thing that with specifically about big boxes, because they're a unique animal, is that I tell clients, building material companies that want to sell to big boxes, every quarter, the CEO of Lowe's, the CEO of Home Depot, both publicly traded, they have a call with Wall Street. Mm-hmm. They send a letter to Wall Street, right? And you mm-hmm. need to be on top. You need to listen into that call, or you need to read that letter, okay? But it's kind of like, here's this big ship, the Queen Mary, and every quarter, that CEO is turning it just slightly. He's turning it a little to the left, a little to the right. He's saying, we're going to have better customer service. We're going to have more, we're going to have fewer SKUs. We're going to focus on project sales versus product sales. He put something in there. And I'm telling people, you need to be on top of that, because chances are you could know more than your buyer knows. So you can say, hey, I read yesterday where your CEO said that you want to focus on projects. We're prepared to help you in your department to have more project sales. And here's how we're going to help you do that, right? Mm-hmm. Even if the guy says, I'm not interested, he's like, wow, I didn't ask for that. This company proactively came to me with an idea.
Yeah, which lines up with what his boss told him last week or something.
Maybe. Right, and so all of a sudden, I'm going to, wow, thank you. You're going to make me look good, because I'll be the first guy at next Monday's meeting with how I'm going to have project sales be a focus in my department, okay?
Yeah.
Or whatever it is, you know. And then the other big animal is Amazon, which I don't understand. I keep waiting to pick up the paper, and it says Amazon buys Lowe's. I just don't understand why they have not bought Lowe's yet. Right. And they bought Whole Foods. It's been, to me, a success, at least my impression. I don't look at numbers the way a Wall Street guy might, but I think it's been successful. And I think that home improvement, building materials got to be a great market for them. And the biggest challenge is, like, how do I ship a bathtub? You know, how do I ship a set of windows? Well, there's 2000 stores right here that can do that for us. Okay. Just like Whole Foods, you know? And so I keep thinking that, you know, I keep waiting for that to happen. And then we have all these other online sellers. It's like almost every category now has a new company, like Dex Direct. Okay. So I think they're in Minnesota or something. Okay. Like, where did they come from? Okay. Well, now you can buy any brand of deck, whatever you need, design your deck, all that, and it can be all online. Right. Yeah. And there, it's like, wow, who would buy a deck online? Well, hello, I don't know, but a bunch of people are, you know, and so that's another challenge for the building material industry, depending on your market you're focused on. But there's many more customers that are saying, I'd rather just deal directly with you online. Okay.
Yeah.
And I can deal with your middleman, your distributor, or I can deal with you, but I don't want to do business the way we've done it in the past. I don't have time for niceties of meetings, and I can't go to lunch with you, and you can't take, I'm not interested in, you know, being taken out to lunch and wined and dined, right? I'm too busy. Right.
Yeah.
And coronavirus thing to me is really like, this is such a slow to change industry. So we'll say online sales, the idea of virtual sales calls are things that they would have been slowly over 5 years. They're now forced to deal with this.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if I'm a building material company and I looked and said, wow, our sales did not go down in March or April or May, but guess what did go down? Our salesman's T&E expenses, because they're not going anywhere. Yeah. Huh. What does that tell me about the role of the salesperson? Okay. There still is a role. Don't get me wrong, but it may not be traveling all over the country trying to meet face to face with people as frequently as it was in the past. Okay.
Yeah.
And the more we've got customers that say, you know, you can answer, I have a question that can be answered with a text. Like, literally, I'd like to text you. Can I get this in 3/8 inch thickness? Right. Mm-hmm. That's it. All I need to know. Right. Come back, say yes, no, or special order, whatever you're going to say. That's all I need. Older salespeople go, oh no, I can't. That would be insulting. No, we have to find out more. Why do you need 3/8 inch? All this no, customer's not interested in that. He's going to go to the person that can say yep or no or whatever, but give me an answer to that specific question right now. That's all I want to know. And that's a hurdle for many people. They literally feel like they're doing a disservice to the customer, you know.
Yeah.
But that's where the customer, particularly the younger the customer, the more they're going, I don't need that. I just need an answer to my question. If you're not going to answer it, I will keep going to competitors till I find one that will answer my question and communicate to me the way I want to communicate. So
yeah.
Sam is typical here. I'm taking over the whole show. I'm just rambling.
No, it's fine.
Sorry, please. So I'm going to stop a minute. And am I headed in a direction? You got another insightful question?
No, you're fine. No, you're absolutely fine. No, I think it's really interesting because, you know, it touches certainly on software and technology and stuff, right? Because if you think about, like, I've been doing a lot of carpentry type projects over this quarantine period, right? So building some chairs, building some stairways and stuff out, cool. in my backyard. And if I could just go online and have an easy tool that lets me, input some measurements and then tells me you need, 22 2x4s and 2 2x6s and blah, blah, blah. And then it just showed up, right?
Yep.
Because I have to take my wife's van and I have to take the seats out and all this garbage, right? And I'm sure that theoretically some of those folks would ship stuff to me, but then I have to talk to a person, right?
Right. You're like me.
And these, I want to maybe do a chat, right? And what's interesting is, so if you think about, if you're to your point, the decking company, there's another one I've seen that is, they sell all these modular, like precast stones that you can build, like walkways, fire pits, brick walls, ovens, paver. Whatever you want with paver type stuff, right?
Yeah.
Well, so let's say if you have a really slick design tool online on your website, or if you want to go that angle, that's going to be really hard to you're not going to integrate that with Home Depot's website. Like maybe you'll get a link from it out to your site, but they don't want you to leave Home Depot's website, right?
Oh, right.
They want to keep you there. So how do you get them to, you can't, I mean, I, at least I've not really seen it where.
I think you can. I think that there's a,
okay.
I want to back up because you pointed out some great things.
Okay.
The first thing is technology. Okay. So let's just take something like a CRM like Salesforce.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so when I work with companies that successfully know how to use Salesforce, they outperform their competitors who either don't use a CRM or don't know how to use a CRM. And so what I find the first thing is companies are waking up to the value of technology, but they don't understand it and they don't understand how to execute or implement it. And many of the technology products like Salesforce or HubSpot or Marketo, will make it seem like there's nothing to this. Just sign up here. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? If there's nothing, this is really easy and you'll get all this benefit. Right. It's not really easy. Okay. It's hard work. Okay. And so I see companies that are, attracted by the siren song of technology, like just sign up here, free 30-day trial, $25 a month, whatever it is, right? And they think that their problem is solved, okay? Mm-hmm. And so the majority of building material companies, half the ones who sign up for Salesforce are unhappy with Salesforce, okay? Now, it's not Salesforce's problem. Maybe it's Salesforce's problem, let's say, because I think that they simplify a more technical sale to get more volume, and they get that volume and then people use it incorrectly. It doesn't work for them. It doesn't pay off. Right. And then I see the percentage of companies who actually realize what this means and they make the investment and they make, for example, if you're a salesperson, you work for us, using Salesforce or our CRM system is a condition of your employment. Okay. You either use this or go find another job. And many building material companies have some, high volume salespeople that are just old school guys that just are going to not do this,
mm-hmm.
Unless they're forced to, right? And so they won't pull that trigger. They'll just think, well, eventually they'll wake up to why this is great. No, they won't. You have to go through a little bit of pain, okay? And it's like I think about years ago, there's a software called SAP. And I've always wondered, like, how great a salespeople they must have had to go in and say, "We're Mr. CEO, we're going to totally screw your business up for the next 12 months. All your employees are going to hate you. You know, everybody's going to resist this. It's going to be the worst nightmare you've ever done, right? But, but in the end, you're going to love us, okay? Mm-hmm. But getting from here to there, I'm just giving you a heads up, it's not easy. And we're going to have strange consultants roaming through your halls that people are going, wait, he doesn't have a tie on, you know, and so I think we have this now modern day thing where people are like, you know, I see companies sign up for HubSpot for marketing automation, and they might as well be using MailChimp. Okay. They, you know, they have this Ferrari in the garage and they don't know how to drive it,
mm-hmm.
you know, And so this whole technology thing is the real key to competitive advantage. I mean, you got to have a great product, you got to have innovation, you got to have good service delivery, all that quality, you know, customer service, all those things. But if you got that in place, now your next thing where you're going to really do is using technology. And technology can be in so many areas. The areas that you pointed out is, like, I don't know about you, but since coronavirus, I am now addicted to YouTube. Like, I go on YouTube, and if I wanted to build a chair, first place I'm going to go is YouTube. I'm not going to go to the chair company that says, "Here's our plans," right?
Yeah. Now, that's what I did.
Right. And so some companies are waking up to this, okay? Now, some companies use a third party. Like, there's a guy named Matt Reisinger, who's just a phenomenal, I'll call it, building material influencer. Matt, I think, lives in Austin. He's a builder. He's really smart. He recognized years ago what was happening in the world of communication. And so I remember I first met Matt maybe 6 years ago at a builder show, where he was walking around with a guy with a video camera trying to get clients to let him interview them at their booth, right? Mm-hmm. And somehow monetize that, right? Well, now Matt, you know, Matt is this guy that companies come to him and say, "We got this new product. We'd like you to, you know, show people how to use it." Okay. Now, Matt is not, well, he's going to charge you to do it. Matt has a credibility that if you gave him a piece of crap product, he is not going to risk his reputation to make $5,000 or $10,000 or whatever the number is, right? He has to actually believe in the product, and, you know, and he points out the pros and cons and you know, all that stuff. So there's a phenomenal influencer that you can, let's say that's a technology thing, reaching more people. Okay. And then there's the thing about, like, the deck industries, I think, actually been pretty good. If you look at, Fiberon, you look at, ASIC, TimberTech, I think you will find, like, deck design tools mm-hmm. that are on their websites that are very good, very helpful, will actually spit out a list of materials you need. Okay. But mm-hmm. not enough companies have realized the power of that and chose to make an investment in it. And to do that right, I assume is probably not cheap, right? I mean, it's cheap to grab my iPhone and walk on a job site and talk about something. I can do that for free, right? But if I'm going to actually have somebody program, like, how to design a deck, okay, that's going to be a major expense, and it's going to be take some time and some commitment, and there's going to be some debugging, all those nasty things. And so most companies go, they want to, the deck industry immediately, people design deck design software, but then you had to pay for it, right? Hmm. And so that was a hindrance to it, right? And then I don't know which deck design company first said, "No, we're going to put it on our website and make it free to anybody," right? And then everybody had to follow suit, right? And not enough companies do that. Whether it's like, I need a new door and I'm interested in making sure I choose the right door. Maybe I'm going to install it. Maybe I'm going to hire my handyman to do it, but I want to make sure he does it right. So I want to look at weather stripping and the details and hinges and locks and all that stuff. I want to educate myself. Whether I'm going to do it myself or not, I want to learn more, right? Yeah. And I think that's another use of technology. The other technology is just think about, you know, like like when I shop at Amazon, the experience. So I'm now measure everything else by the Amazon experience, right?
Yeah. Okay.
How hard was it for me to find the product, to find the information I needed in order to make a decision if I want to buy this, right? Amazon has figured out what they need to tell me and not anymore. Right now, now, if I want more, there's a ton there. If I want to read 98 questions, ask about this product, I can wade through 98 questions. Right. But they've kind of figured out what's the least amount of information that most people need so they can quickly. We're helping you by making your decision quick. Right.
Yeah.
You know, we're not helping you by overburdening you with too much material. Okay. And so I look and say, okay, so it's easy to find a product on Amazon. They suggest alternatives. They do a number of things. And then I go buy. And it's like basically, you know, maybe I push two more buttons. Right. But it's done. And then instantly we got your order. Like, and then pretty soon, here's the tracking for your, it will arrive on this date. Oh, it's on the truck. Oh, it arrived. Okay. You know, this guy signed for it, whatever it is. Like, I live in an apartment house. And so, so now, you know, like I ordered a sweatshirt from England yesterday, from, I love this crazy designer, Paul Smith. He like, you know, I'm a big sock fanatic. I have like over 300 pairs of socks and they're crazy. And Paul Smith is one of my favorite designers because he's very whimsical and fun. And so he had this great sweatshirt with a big dinosaur on the front of it. And it was 40% off from an already ridiculous price. And I decided I needed a dinosaur sweatshirt, right? From England. Mm-hmm. And it was like same experience, like Amazon, bam, bam, bam. Okay. And too many building material companies complicate things. Well, no, we can't just do that. You have to talk to somebody. We got to see about how do you want to ship it and where's this and where's that, right? And the companies that are streamlining it, okay, for those people that want a streamlined experience, okay, are winning, okay? And what I see is the companies that resist that and think they need to complicate, and it's too complicated. You can't just place an order for a product. Okay. This is a big deal. Okay. Well, be careful because somebody down the street is going to go, it's not a big deal. Okay. I'm going to make it not a big deal. Right. And so what I think happens is these companies it isn't overnight. They don't see all of a sudden our sales are dropping. Okay. And it's kind of like, you know, I learned back when I had an agency, I had a couple of young people that were just brilliant people. I hired right out of college because of their how smart they were and their curiosity. They knew nothing about building materials. Okay. But I figured like, that's not going to be hard for these two. Right. You know what? I can get somebody smart that doesn't have a great attitude. They're not curious. They just do it the way they've always done it. You know, and so I hired these two. And one of them was named Adam, and I gave Adam this assignment. I said, Adam, I need you to go research this, right? A couple of days later, I pick up the phone as I would, a guy that's, you know, over 60, and I call and I get his voicemail and say, Adam, just wanted to check, how's that project coming? And I don't get an answer, right? Within, you know, of course, an hour, right? I haven't gotten an answer. So then I send him an email, same question, no answer. Well, I go home. The end of the day, I go home. It's not the end of the world or anything. But I come in the next morning and I sat at home and I brooded about this. This bothered me, you know. I sat at home and I was angry at Adam. Like, how dare he not respond to me? Doesn't he know I'm the boss, right? I sign his paycheck. So the next morning I walked in and my assistant goes, you know, Mark, what's wrong? She could just sense my body language. And I explained to her and she said, well, did you try texting him? I go, what? She goes, give me your phone. Right. This is called a text. Here's how you do it. I go, oh, okay. So I, Adam, how's this project coming? Within like 10 seconds, boom. Oh, I got great stuff. Do you have time at noon? I can come in and take you through it. I'm like, okay, now I have a choice. I can be probably like my father would have been, which is like, look, Adam, you work for me. If I call you, you call me right back. If I send you an email, you respond right away. Okay. You do it the way I do it, right? Because I'm the boss. And I go, no, the world's changing. I need to, for my clients, I need to be up on this stuff and adapting and learning about it so that I can consult them, okay? Because otherwise, you're going to take a group of people that prefer texting and you're going to say, I refuse to do business with you. Okay. Or I'm going to make it really hard for you to do business with me. Okay.
Yeah.
Right. Because I know the best way to do business and it's not by text. So I'm going to decide for you. Right. And And so now we have social media. I mean, I get one inquiry. I get on average 3 inquiries per week from companies that are interested in working with me or talking with me. And one of them comes from LinkedIn. 1 out of 3. Now, I make it real easy to go, here's my phone number. Here's my email. Here's a contact form. I make it really easy. But still, 1 out of 3 is a message on LinkedIn. Okay. Yeah. And then I discovered that there are people that are important, let's say VP of marketing of a big building material company, that we know each other personally. I have his office number, his cell number. I have his personal email and his business email. I could use all 4 of those to say, hey, could we meet at the roofing show next week? Let's say. And it would not surprise me. I get no response. And then I go to LinkedIn, I send him a message, and in 15 minutes, like, hey, yeah, Wednesday at 2 o'clock, stop by the booth. Love to catch up, right?
Yeah.
Now it's not everybody does that, but I'm saying, okay, I'll just pick a number. I'll say, okay, 20% of people like to talk on the phone. 20% of people like to have face-to-face meetings. 20% of people like email. 20% of the people like to communicate by text or chat box. 20% like to use text. Okay, so... And so you're choosing, to me, to ignore segments of your customers when you're not using technology and you're not comfortable with it. And technology, yeah. I've got a client right now that I'm talking with about possibly working with. And their biggest challenge right now is they are moving online largely at their clients' requests. Their customers are saying, we would like to be able to just go online and order your product. We don't need to talk to anybody. Okay? Can you set that up? We love your product. We love your company and all that. But it would really help us if we could just go online and say, I need 2 bundles or, you know, whatever I need. Right? Okay? Right? You know, your product is not, it's a set product. We're not going to change the dimensions. We're not going to change colors. Like, this is what you have. Great, right? And their salespeople are scared to death. Their salespeople, rather than saying this is, and they're saying, look, we're going to still give you the same commission, whether the person buys it from you or they're your customer and they bought online. Okay, your income is not going to be affected, right? This is going to free, you're going to, one, make your customers happier. They're going to be more loyal because we're giving them the option to buy they want the way they want to. And 3, you're going to have now free time to go get new customers that you don't have today because you're babysitting your current customers, right? But yet they're afraid of this change. And their suspicion is, of course, eventually I'm going to lose that. You know, I make $50,000 a year from these customers that order from me. And if they go online, eventually, like, you know, 2 years from now, the boss is going to go, oh, we're no longer going to pay you online commissions, or we're going to pay you less or whatever. Right. And it's a natural fear, but it's like that. Once again, the company has to make a decision. Like, the customers want technology. Our salespeople are uncomfortable because they want to control the relationship. Okay. That's part of, they think, is their job security. And it's like, that's old think.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. A key part of it is, I mean, there's a trust aspect there, right? Having trust with your employees. But there's also, you know, you need to have those features in there that actually do track and assign who belongs, what opportunity, what customer, what lead, whatever it is, belongs to who, if it's coming in from that, you know, that particular channel, right? And it's interesting, too, because, you know, what I find is those sort of, call them digital transformation, let's call it. That's the buzzword, right? Of putting some kind of online design tool or whatever like that online, you know, it has really far-reaching deep effects into the company, right? Because now what I've seen a lot is employees within a company, if you're hiring younger folks particularly, they expect to have some kind of new cool technology to work with. And if you say, well, oh, the customer has an order, I bet a huge percentage do this, right? Pull up the AS400 terminal and type in the order, right? If they can't do it from their phone, or they can't go to use that design tool themselves, then they feel like, gosh, I'm working at like this crusty old company that doesn't have cool tools. And you'll actually lose people over that, you know,
you won't get them. Like, one of the issues, like, I tell young people, one, I want to ask you, you know, should you even go to college? Okay. Just want to ask you in today's world, you know, are you sure of the, I know there's the pride. I know there's like, maybe you're the first person in your family that graduate, that will go and graduate from college. That's an amazing, powerful thing, right? And education is never a bad thing. But if you get yourself in a whole bunch of debt and you come out of college and there's no job other than a barista or bartender or Uber driver, okay, what did you do, right? And I look and say, okay, so, you know, if you looked at the building materials industry, right, for example, you know, you could go to work for a roofer, okay, and quickly be making, I don't know, you know, 60 to 80 grand, right? And you could choose to stay there, or you could decide after a couple of years, I'm going to go in business for myself. And there's nothing stopping you. There's no cost of entry. You don't have to buy a factory and $1 million worth of trucks or something. You just decide you're a roofing contractor, right? Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, now you can be making $500,000, okay? And running your own show, your own business, doing things your own way, right? And which is an opportunity that if you come out of school with a bachelor's degree, are you ever going to be making, running your own business or making $500,000? Okay. They don't teach you to do that. Right.
Yeah.
And so that's the first thing. Then the second thing I say to other people that go to, let's say a college graduate that's sharp. I say, okay, you're looking at going to work for you want to go work for Google, let's say, or a technology company. Okay. Cause that's all the hot new stuff. Right. Well, everybody, like early in my career, everybody wanted to go do commercials for McDonald's or Nike or Apple, right? And so everybody wants to go work for those companies, right? So the competition, like you're stepping in, like across the street from where I live is Google has 1,500 employees.
Hmm.
They're all, I run into them at coffee shops and stuff, and they're great, fun people, and they're scary smart. They are so smart. You know, I'm like, oh my God. It's like I'm sitting next to a rocket scientist, right? You know, and I just love being in Boulder here. There's just like, we have a joke where, you know, the bus boy has a master's degree in the restaurant and your waiter has a PhD, right? There's just so many smart people here. And I'm looking and saying, okay, so the competition level to excel at a place like Google is unbelievable. Okay. Your ability to be a rock star in technology is like, man, you know, like if you got it, then great. I don't ever want to rain somebody's parade or whatever. But if you want a fantastic career where it's easy to be a rock star, go into building materials. Okay. if you go into building materials, sales, marketing, management, what, I don't care what it is. Okay. They don't get the best people. Okay. And it's like this tired old industry. Well, I got a job. As opposed to, I'm excited. I'm working for Kohler. I'm working for Anderson. I'm going to change the way the buildings are built. Okay. You know, you don't hear that. But yet, if you come into building materials, it's so easy for you to stand out and be a rock star. And if the company you're with doesn't appreciate your value, you could real quickly, you know, you got a year or two under your belt and you understand what an architect is. You know, you can, there's a whole bunch of companies that are waiting to hire you. Right. And, yeah. And, you know, it may not lead to you run your own roofing company, or a shingle manufacturer. Okay. Cause there's a big cost of entry there, but you know, you could end up being the CEO. And so I just feel like, to your point, people look at the industry and go, oh, they're still using fax machines. I mean, there are still contractors placing orders with fax machines, okay? And and companies have to take the fax, have a fax machine, take the fax, manually enter it in, but that's the way old Henry's going to do business, all right? And so, you know, if you're a young, sharp person, you look at that, you're going, nah, they think I'm, you know, maybe car sales would be better. I don't know. You know, just, I tell them like, wow, you know, this is a great, if you want a career and where you can really stand out and do a great job building materials. And it's mainly because there's not so much competition,
yeah.
You know, of outstanding people. People in marketing and building materials tend to do what they're told. They tend to wait till the VP of sales tells them, I need a new brochure. Then they go do the brochure, right? They're not saying, the VP of sales doesn't go to them and say, I'm having a problem with this. From your marketing expertise, what do you think we should do? I'd like your thoughts on that. They don't get asked that question. They get told to do something. We need a new website. Sales are down, new website. go find a place to do our new website for us, right? Okay. Yeah. You know, salespeople, you know, are there's exceptions. There's many really smart marketing people that I know, but it mainly is the company they work for appreciates their value and their thinking and allows them to flourish. And there's also great salespeople, but there's also many salespeople who just go through the motions. Salesforce says I need to make 5 calls a day. I make 5 calls a day. Salesforce tells me to 10 days later, make a follow-up call. I checked off all the boxes. I made the follow-up call. They're just automatons or whatever the word is. They're just going through the motion, right? And it's what their bosses told them to do, right? And they're not like, wow, I want to try a new way to call on this customer, right? Nope. Just follow the thing. And then, oh, we got a lead. So they automatically get 5 emails that are sent every Tuesday at 10 a.m. that starts with a subject, how to, because HubSpot told us that that's the best way in the world. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay. So do you realize every HubSpot follower sends their emails at Tuesday at 10 a.m.? So everybody's inbox is overloaded Tuesday at 10 a.m., right?
Yeah,
how about
right.
10:15? How about 9:45? Take a chance, you know? And then right. and then every email starts with this subject line. So what if you try something different? You know, now how-to is a great subject line, but, you know, but if everybody's using those same tricks, literally, okay, then everything becomes less effective and you're not thinking, you're not trying. You know? Yeah.
Well, and I think it helps, you know, certain techniques you use kind of let your personality shine through better than others. And I mean, like you mentioned earlier, your sock collection, right? And I think that's something that it's kind of part of your personal brand that, you know, the attendees that come to your shows and your seminars or read your books, like they know about this, right?
Right.
Well, and it's kind of a funny, quirky thing maybe, but it's not the boring, like LinkedIn profile, Facebook,
no
messaging that just is super corporate, or you know what I mean. And yeah. you might expect from some giant consulting Boston Group type thing, right?
Right. You know, and like I, you know, so I use Facebook for personal interactions. So Facebook is where you'll find my socks. Okay, and I have clients that like to, you know, we connect on Facebook, but most clients are on LinkedIn. And LinkedIn to me is business, okay? And so mm-hmm. not that I don't occasionally, you know, enter just a little bit of personal stuff, but most of the time it's business. And so, for example, and when I do, in the last 6 months, I think I've done or participated in 4 workshops for companies on how to use LinkedIn, right? Mm. And I'm always telling the salespeople, be yourself, to your point, Sam. Like you let it, and I show him examples. There's a salesman named Bruno that sells roofing in Florida. And Bruno he just lets his personality shine. He's all the time showing pictures of people doing stupid things, dangerous things on job sites, right? That's Bruno. That's his personality. Okay. Right. Then there's, you know, somebody else that's more serious, right? And it's like, you know, be yourself. Okay. And you know, and I'm always telling people, like, you know, I always show them like 6 examples of, here's 6 different types of personalities of people on LinkedIn, and every one of them works. Okay. What, you know, and you could either be one of those, follow their lead if that's you, or develop your own. You know, like I love, there's a guy that works for a company called Hearth and Home, Tim Rethlake, I think is how you pronounce his name. And I love Tim's title is VP of Sales Enablement. Okay. So his job is to enable sales. Okay. And like, wow. And once a day, Tim puts an extremely thought provoking, just a great quote on LinkedIn about being a better salesperson. And he said, you know, like one of my favorites is, I've talked myself out of many sales. I don't remember ever listening myself out of a sale. Okay.
Right.
And so every day he has just the simple thing like that. He's never saying, if you need a new fireplace, Hearth and Home has, look at our new model KB221 available in copper. No, that's all he does. And you're sitting there going, wow, this is a company I'd like to do business with. Right. Mm-hmm. Now he has salespeople that are saying, here's our KB221 copper, you know, whatever. That's their style. Right. You know, but it's, and once again, it's technology. You know, it's back to our original discussion here. this is all about technology. And the other big thing I found, Sam, over the years is that customers do not know the building material companies, manufacturers, distributors, dealers, okay, do not know their customers. They really don't know what's going on in their customer. They make assumptions about customers only care about price. Customers care about this. Customers care about that. They make assumptions, right? And I love it when I go to a trade show. I don't like trade show. I think trade shows are a big waste of money. But if you're going to be at a trade show, I love it when I go to a booth and I see there's the CEO of the company standing in the middle of the booth wanting to talk to customers no matter their size. The biggest customer, the smallest customer, he doesn't care. He's there. Yeah. He reminds me of Mayor Ed Koch years ago in New York City. He would walk the streets of New York or ride the subway, and he'd look at the average citizen or person on the street and say, how am I doing? Okay, how am I doing as your mayor, right? And so I see so many building material company leaders, they only deal with the biggest customers. It's in a controlled environment, a hotel suite. It's at a nice dinner. It's one-on-one. Nobody gets anything nasty, dirty. They don't hear any bad things about their
box tickets somewhere or whatever, right?
Yeah. And that's fine. But man, the companies that to me spend time, like I don't know if it's still true, but I heard that years ago, Procter & Gamble, every product has an 800 number on it, and you can call up and you can ask a question like, how does Crest toothpaste do this? Or can I get it in whatever? And that I heard that they used to once a week, compile a cassette with a number of these calls and give them to the CEOs, the senior leaders, who would then hop in their car with their cassette player, and they'd plug it in and they'd just try to listen in on what are customers asking? What are they worried about today? Okay. Well, building material companies, the salespeople are very attuned to the customer. But management, the salesperson can come back and say, oh my gosh, customers are asking me about this. And management many times will just dismiss it or go, we don't care about that. Or that's unimportant. Or we disagree. The customer's wrong. And I'm like, no, the customer's right. and so that many times is, I guess, what, I'm going like, we all look at our job and go, this is pretty easy. Why do people hire me to do it? Right. But it's because we're naturals at it, And so I love to talk to my clients' customers. I love to interview them, meet with them, go on job sites, go to their offices and really deeply understand them. And all of a sudden, boy, wow. Many times I find the company has an asset that the customer would value, but they aren't utilizing that asset. Okay. And it's really funny how the company doesn't goes, oh, well, of course we have whatever. We'll be glad to package it this way. We'll be glad to do whatever, right? Anybody asks us, we do that. Okay. But we don't tell people that because nobody really cares. No, guess what? They do care. Right. And I'm all the time uncovering something that they're doing that they're not fully utilizing, and technology helps them to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's funny. So I had a quick story here in regards to some of the ways that you work with your customers. So there's a gentleman I'm a friend with here in Cincinnati, who used to for a long time work with an AEC materials company. And I know it was involved in like BIM and some other stuff. And I mentioned something because, you and I met through a coaching program through Vancouver. And I mentioned something about, I know a guy who does some work in that space, Mark Mitchell. And he's like, you know, Mark Mitchell? he's like, he's really well known. Like and so it's just really funny that it's like you in Boulder, me in Cincinnati, you in Vancouver, this other guy in Cincinnati knew exactly who you were, like had your book and everything. Right. Yes. So that I think that the stuff that you're doing is working, I guess, is one piece of feedback. But I'm curious, you have done a lot of speaking events and seminars, I think, as part of your offering when you draw these people in from all over the place. What is that experience like for attendees at your sessions, and how do you kind of make that unique?
Well, so I started years back when I first started the consulting business. I recognized that if you're a building material company, there's no source of education for you. Like you can sell to architects and you can join the AIA and you can waste your money on an exhibit at a trade show. And you can go to classes and the classes will teach you how to be a better architect, how an architect can get more customers, how an architect should charge. They'll teach you all about the architecture business. What you will not find anywhere is how to sell an architect. Well, it won't find it, right? The same, you can sell home builders and you can join the National Association of Home Builders. Great organization. So is the AIA, right? But they're focused on their members, which are architects or builders, not on the manufacturers. And so once again, you will find tons of courses about how to be a better home builder, how a home builder website should be designed, how to, you know, how to close more sales, whatever it is about building, right? But nothing about how you can do a better job selling or meeting the needs of the builder as a manufacturer. That doesn't exist. Hmm. So I decided, okay, I'm going to be that guy. I don't know how to do this, right? But I'd already written the book at this time, and I'd also discovered the power of thought leadership, which is something that many people can't. They look at people as who are defined as a thought leader and kind of go, "Oh, wow, it's that guy." I go, "No, you're a thought leader too." I've never met a person that couldn't teach me something, right? Mm-hmm. And so I've never met, you know, a roofing salesman that couldn't tell me the five biggest mistakes roofing contractors make. Okay. How roofing contractors could be more successful, right? But yet they don't have the confidence to like go on LinkedIn and share that knowledge, right? Mm-hmm. Right. And so I just somehow, you know, found the balls to do it, right? And so I just blindly started like that Field of Dreams movie. If you build it, they will come, right? Mm-hmm. And so I decided, okay, first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to have a 2-day workshop, right? I'm going to have a workshop. You're going to come to Boulder and I'm going to teach you about building material sales and marketing, right? And so I had no idea how to plan an event. I had no clue. I just knew that I could share knowledge. So I did my first event back in, 2013, I think. And I had like 18 people come, right? And so then I then did one in the spring, and then I decided, I wonder if I went to Chicago and I shortened it to 1 day, would I get more attendance, right? Well, I went to Chicago, did a 1-day event, and I got 12 people. I go, well, that doesn't work, right? And so then over time now, I've grown to where I've always had an vision of having a cap on it. Like, I don't want 300 people. I want enough people that I and my guest presenters can each work personally with you. Okay. If you have a question, you want to sit down and deal in your thing, I want to be able to do that. And so I cap it at 60 people. And so we've been doing it, you know, in the spring and fall. And then along came the coronavirus and I was supposed to do one April 20th. I ended up doing it as a live stream webinar with my, you know, so I could of course talk for 2 days, but I bring in people that are, here's an expert in how to implement Salesforce. Here's in the building material. All of my people I bring in, they're an expert in their subject, but they also are focused on the building materials industry because it's a very, in the biggest thing people make mistakes is you hire a great web firm to design your website and they don't understand this industry. They make an assumption that if you sell a home builder or an architect, you've made the sale. And they don't understand how quickly and easily it can be undone. Mm-hmm. Who is the influencer decision maker, right? So I always tell people, look, like I have on my website, I have a list of like 35 ad agencies that focus on building materials. And I'm like, if you're looking for a new agency, please, you know, look at this list, okay? Because they at least know how a home is built, how an architect works, okay? If you get the, you know, a really creative guy in your city that's never worked in building materials, it's not going to, you're going to have this beautiful, creative product that may not do shit for you, right? Mm-hmm. So now I'm planning on this fall doing another live stream because I'm not confident people are ready to travel, and then get back onto the live events in Boulder in the spring, right? And then I was also maybe six times a year I speak at company sales meetings, where they'll have me come in and usually speak to the large group and then usually do a breakout session about a specific subject. Okay. But now it's funny. I'm having companies that they're either having a virtual sales meeting where they're having me, you know, speak virtually like on Zoom or something. And I did one, we had like, I don't know, 50 people, you know, like 2 weeks ago. The other one is people are having, let's say, weekly Zoom sales meeting calls. They're every Monday morning, 9 o'clock, we're having a call, right? All the salespeople, right? Well, they're finding they're running out of things to say. So they're saying, hey, Mark, would you jump in? Could we buy an hour of your time to sit down and just share your thoughts and answer our guys' questions? And so it's funny. I'm seeing, you know, this virtual thing boil up. Although I have to say, I miss traveling. I'm looking forward to starting traveling again. There is something when I go meet with people in person, there's something that you get it's hard to get virtually. Okay.
Yeah.
But you do what you have to do to do it. So I'm consulting with companies who say we have a specific problem and we think you could help us with it because of your knowledge of the industry. Right. Then, I do speaking and I do workshops and I'm looking at maybe starting to do more webinars. I was doing them for a while, but then it stopped, but I don't know why I stopped, but I did. They just were taking too much time, I guess. So I love learning. I'm like my therapist says, Mark, the day you stop learning is the day you will die. Right. So I'm constantly learning. Okay. As soon as I am sure of something, an alarm goes off in my head that says, wait a minute. Right. You know, I start questioning anything that I am absolutely positively sure about. Right. It's just how I am, which can be sometimes frustrating with companies that deal with me because I will say, hey, you know, this is what I found so far. Based on that, this is what I think you should do. And then 3 days later, I call them and go, "Wait, I was wrong.
that's important, yeah.
You know, I talked to three more people or this person, and oh my gosh, you know, I could see how I went down that path, but that's not what you need to do. And so, you know, I don't give up. I don't stop. You know, I love solving problems. Part of my Myers-Briggs personality is INTP. And so people don't believe it, but I am introverted. I'm a gregarious introvert. If you know me, I'm not an introvert, but the idea of going in to a networking event with 50 strangers is like not something I look forward to because I only know how to talk deep. I don't know how to network with shallow talk. And then the other aspect is an INTP gets up every day and loves to solve problems. So I'm looking for every day. I'm looking for a problem to solve. And it's like I could never work for a corporation because they want things to be smooth. And I'd have to invent a problem, you know, just to keep myself entertained.
No, I understand. Absolutely. Well, Marcus, it's been great having you on the show. And I think you've got some incredible insights about that. Really, I mean, a lot of companies outside of building materials, even in regards to really understanding your customer and not making those assumptions, a lot of companies, you know, could take that advice and think about that really hard, I think, especially in this time when we've kind of accelerated competition because the economy and all these other strange things happening. So if people want to learn more about what you do or your book, or I believe you have a podcast as well, that you do, or just read some of your writing, where can they find you on the internet?
Well, number one would be go to my website, which is seethewizard.com, which is SEETHE. And then wizard, I spell WHIZARD.com. And on there, you will find over 500 articles. So you could type in a question, how to sell architects, and I've probably written 6 articles on how to sell architects. Whatever your problem is, there's a good chance that you're going to find it. And it's my thoughts. It's like I'm just giving you, here's something to think about. I'm not saying you have to do this, right? And then I have a podcast that you can tune in. I have a YouTube channel. And then every Sunday night, I send out a weekly newsletter, which is about building material sales and marketing within the channel. It's not about how to sell consumers. It's about architects, dealers, so forth. And it's always something very topical that I write about. And many sales managers read that and then use my article as a subject for a discussion with their salespeople the following week. Are we doing this? Is Mark right here? Is Mark wrong? You know, and so I've got a ton of free content that's available to anybody. And the other one is connect with me on LinkedIn, you know, because I'm sharing all of that stuff. Also, I'm sharing regularly on LinkedIn. And so I love to meet new people in the industry, and it won't result in an aggressive sales call from me. It'll just be, hey, nice to meet you.
Yeah.
You know, I put it on, you know, I depend always on inbound inquiries. I'm not Mr. Cold Call sales guy. So people come to me if they think I might, they want to talk about if I'd be a good fit for them or not. And we talk about it. So this has been, I've really enjoyed it. And I think, you know, that, you know, you're in this great, also this great area of the adoption of technology and understanding that, which is so challenging and difficult for so many companies. To me, you're either in it or not. Like I have a number of virtual assistants, and one of them understands technology. So whenever my Nest camera isn't working, or I don't care what it is, I call Jonathan, and you know, Jonathan fixes it for me, right? You know, and so there's so many people in this industry that I think recognize that they need technology, but they don't know where to go. They don't know how to do it. You know, and what I've loved about you, Sam, is you always make it understandable, where I talk to so many technology people and it's all of a sudden in the second sentence, they've lost me. And it's almost like they wear like a badge of honor that I'm smarter than you. So I'm going to, trust me, you don't understand anything. So hire me to fix this. Well, I'm not comfortable hiring somebody to do something I don't understand what they're doing. Right. You know?
Yeah.
And I really loved how, you know, you make things so understandable as well as you do a great job.
I appreciate that. Thanks. Yeah. It's been great being able to reconnect with you and chat some. Hopefully we can talk again more soon, and hopefully you're able to kind of eventually get back out on the road and start doing your traveling circuit again. But
yeah, I'd come to Cincinnati and get some skyline, you know?
Absolutely. Come, but return to your Ohio roots, right?
Right. That's right. Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to Unstoppable Talk. We hope you enjoyed today's podcast. If you did, be sure to support the show by leaving a 5-star review on iTunes. And learn more about this show by heading over to unstoppablesoftware.com. Until next time, keep innovating.